step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
Hey, really glad you're with us for the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's kind of choose your own adventure in terms of what the list of martinis is today. The first one is definitely good in some ways and definitely very, very bad in some ways. The second one, I think, is almost entirely good. You could say it's crazy. And the last one is probably both good and crazy. So, Jim, let's start with the first one. The Durham report dropped yesterday afternoon. This is, of course, U.S. Attorney John Durham being the special counsel looking into the origins of Operation Crossfire Hurricane. That was the FBI's investigation into possible collusion between the Russian government and the Trump campaign during the 2016 election, launched at the end of July 2016. As you point out today in The Jolt, John Durham doesn't do anything quickly. So for those wondering why it took so long, it's just kind of the way he operates. But there may have been other factors involved as well. If he does, in fact, testify before Congress, perhaps we'll find out some of that. But here's the basic gist of the report. While there's no recommended prosecutions or rule changes at the FBI, it is pretty strong in its condemnation of everything that went into this investigation. First of all, this was basically cooked up by the Hillary Clinton campaign to distract us all from her scandal involving the classified information on private servers. Secondly, there was no actual evidence to warrant Operation Crossfire Hurricane. No verified evidence, but Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok launched it anyway. You might remember that I'm talking about the insurance policy, Strzok and his lover Lisa Page back then. All they had were unconfirmed suspicions based on a nobody from the Trump campaign who was not even paid, named George Papadopoulos. Efforts to gather more human intelligence on him were actually exculpatory rather than condemning. Same with Carter Page. The Steele dossier was BS from top to bottom. Steele basically made it up based on rumor and innuendo. And his main source from what supposedly happened in Russia was from a guy who no longer lived in Russia. The FBI knew Steele was full of it in 2016. So the fact that Comey briefed President-elect Trump on it so he and Clapper could get the dossier public was unnecessary and basically launched a fake scandal. It also doesn't mention this, Jim, but it also means that since they knew it was fake, both Jim Comey and Rod Rosenstein were signing FISA warrants based on information they knew wasn't true. So basically, the whole Mueller investigation was unnecessary, wasted tons of time and money, and obviously plagued the presidency based on falsehood. So again, a lot of this we already knew, but to see it all in one piece is just makes you fume, makes you frustrated, and makes you really wonder about our government.
Yeah, it is hard to call this a good martini because the sense that there will be no true accountability, there will be no true consequence for this. When you sign a FISA warrant application on false information, there should be some darn consequences. Why is Andrew McCabe on CNN insisting that there's nothing new here and that this is a witch hunt and that the FBI did nothing wrong? When the FBI issued a statement saying that it regrets the mistakes and that had taken steps to fix them, it can't be a nothing burger if the FBI says, yeah, we've already fixed the problems by then. Well, that's an acknowledgement that the problems existed at that time. It's a fair question. Why? Like, if you're CNN and you're attempting to rejuvenate your image, perhaps a bit more on this later in the podcast, why is Andrew McCabe working for you? Why is he still there? He's this report meticulously detailed and laid out. And you can't say, you know, as I jokingly began my morning jolt today, you can't say that Durham rushed through this, right? You know, this is his style. He does not speed through things. He, you know, some argue he works at a snail-like pace, but he is meticulous. He is thorough. He leaves no stone unturned. And if you want to argue that Trump has been hyperbolic when he says this is the greatest scandal of all time, the greatest witch hunt of all time, all that kind of stuff, okay, you can make those arguments, but Trump was largely correct that large portions of the FBI decided in 2016 that he was some sort of enemy of the state or some sort of threat or some sort of potential Russian asset based on nothing, based on no real evidence whatsoever, on rumor and hearsay and stuff that couldn't be verified, launched an investigation, let it leak that they were doing an investigation, no doubt in an effort, you know, knowing that that would have a huge impact on the 2016 election. And then after it all proved to be nonsense, you know, there was no validity to it, they ended up deciding to go ahead with the investigation anyway, as you said, cited it in those FISA warrants, and basically kneecapped the Trump presidency from the beginning, or at least I think they wanted to. And they put it in a situation where, like, it's, in some ways, you could argue this worked to Trump's advantage, that the left spent at least 2 years, if not more, chasing its tail, looking for evidence of an evil conspiracy that didn't exist. But on the other hand, in this particular situation, Donald Trump, of all people, can say, where do I go to get my reputation back? Where do I go? Will the New York Magazine withdraw the cover piece that speculated that Trump had been a Russian asset, a Russian-controlled operative since the 1980s? I haven't seen any retractions for that yet. The only person who you could say really gave that much of a real effort of this was Eric Wemple over at the Washington Post, who really wrapped Rachel Maddow on the knuckles for the stuff she was saying on MSNBC every night. Other than that, by and large, we haven't seen that many people in the media come out and say, oh, you know what? This whole dossier was always shaky. By the way, I still think BuzzFeed did a Trump an inadvertent favor by publishing it, by letting people see it for their own eyes and decide for themselves, you know, how implausible it seemed. Harry Reid made reference to it in a letter to the FBI. Clearly, lots of people knew about this dossier back then, and people were acting on it, and people were making veiled references to it. But the American people themselves never got a chance to weigh in on this. All they heard were these vague rumors that, you know, Trump and Putin were tied somehow. Well, now we know it. There was never anything there, and it's a black eye for the organization. I'll skip our traditional diehard jokes about the FBI. And this is an instance. I know that they have a very difficult task, but some of these wounds of the FBI's reputation are self-inflicted, and this is one of them. And what has been indisputable from very early on was that there was this almost paralyzing groupthink at the highest level of the FBI under Jim Comey that made all of them believe they had some sort of duty to protect the country from the election of Donald Trump. That's not what the FBI was built for, no matter what you want to say about J. Edgar Hoover and his predilections and habits. And if you don't have a neutral, nonpartisan Federal Bureau of Investigation, the country can't get anything done.
That's exactly right. We've got massive liars coming out of this. Comey, Rosenstein for signing the FISA warrants, and obviously Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok. John Brennan was on cable news ad infinitum talking about how strong evidence of collusion. And of course, coming out of those classified congressional hearings every day saying the evidence of collusion is overwhelming, Adam Schiff deserves a place in the Never Believe Them Again Hall of Fame. Jim, the last two elections, the most significant effort to alter the outcome came from our own government, our own intel community, both with the Hunter Biden fake letter about the laptop and then what we just talked about from 2016. What do we make of that?
So it's so many things in the world of politics and government and how the country is supposed to run. I come back to that aphorism from Spider-Man: with great power comes great responsibility. And when you have great power over something, you have to, one, you have to handle it responsibly. And two, very often that means giving up certain other things you'd like to do. In the argument about Hunter Biden, I keep emphasizing that if your father is a senator or the vice president or the president of the United States, you really should not be running around getting massive payments from foreign companies with ties to hostile foreign governments if that is not literally illegal. And obviously it depends on whether someone can prove that it's influence peddling. Even if it was all straight on the up and up, selling your artwork for massive fortunes and stuff like that. You can't do that because your dad is the president or the vice president, right? When you get that much power that comes with that position in government, you have to give up certain things. And one of them is you can't just take giant piles of cash and giant multi-carat diamond gifts from Chinese businessmen. You have to give up something if you're going to have that much power. If you go to work at the FBI, you get a lot of power, right? You get that cool gold badge, you get a gun, you get the power to arrest people, right? There's enormous authority with that. Just by investigating someone, you can hurt someone's reputation. Ironically, Durham, in one of the few public speeches he's ever given, was all about this. And he talked about the damage that just being investigated could be to somebody's reputation, which means if you're going to investigate someone, you dang well better know what you're doing. At the FBI, all of these high-level personnel basically saw, well, I worked for the FBI, I took an oath through the Constitution, I took an oath to uphold the law, but I also really feel very strongly about politics. I really feel very strongly that Democrats are the good guys and Republicans are the bad guys. But you have to check that at the door. And clearly, these people could not do that. Clearly, both in their treatment of Hillary Clinton and their treatment of Donald Trump. And if you have, you know, partisan axe grinding in the highest levels of law enforcement, nobody trusts law enforcement anymore. And the entire system of justice starts to unravel.
So, yeah, everybody involved in deliberately deceiving the American people on this issue and those 51 people who signed the letter calling the laptop Russian disinformation when it obviously wasn't, they should just be banished out of polite society. Last question on this, Jim. Wall-to-wall ink airtime for years on this. The Durham report drops, and since there's no criminal referrals or rule changes, basically everybody that spent all that time demonizing Trump and everybody else related to this story is basically like, nothing to see here, move right along. So what's the journalistic lesson here? Do you expose sources? Do you never trust these sources again? How do you respond to this? I mean, Pulitzers were awarded for what turned out to be a bald-faced lie.
And by the way, am I correct that McClatchy is still insisting that Cohen was in Prague long after everybody had proved there was no passport record, that his cell phone had pinged a tower? There are some people who are so dug in on this. They're reminded of that the stories of the Japanese soldiers on Pacific Islands in World War II, who long after the war ended still believed the war was still going on. That's kind of what's at work in some of these. In other cases, it's like it's a real embarrassment to the media. And they don't want to say, hey, you know, this thing that not only did we report on, not only did we claim, you know, report things that turned out to not be true, not only did we pour gasoline onto all kinds of speculation. Like, has anyone apologized for like the rise of Luis Mensch and this idea that, because the other section of today's Morning Jolt goes through a long section. I've been reading Ben Smith's book about the rise and fall of BuzzFeed. And entirely separate from what you said, but Ben Smith at least has the wherewithal to recognize that this set off a round of conspiracy theorizing amongst progressives that is every bit as bad as Pizzagate and QAnon and all the crazy stuff you saw on the right. And he goes through the example of Luis Mensch. And I guess that apparently at one point BuzzFeed runs an article that there were more than 200 public officials and figures she had claimed were Russian agents. And apparently after that, MSNBC stopped booking her. They began to realize she was just making up stuff, right? And it demonstrates there's as much of an appetite on the left for that as there is on the right, maybe more. In fact, you could argue that, you know, Aunt Edna forwarding you this forwarding you an email or posting on Facebook that, you know, Joe Biden is going to sell the state of Nebraska to the Chinese next month or something like that. I'm not saying that's good. That's bad. But on the other hand, crazy conspiracy theories don't end up being embraced by the New York Times and CNN and MSNBC and all these other institutions. Like, you ask yourself, which form of disinformation is actually more dangerous and more a bigger problem for the country?
So it's good the truth got out. Horrific that it ever happened. The deception, the dishonesty on such a grand scale. Criminal, in my opinion, even though it never will be. And the fact that there's no accountability is very disappointing here. All right, let's talk about Four Patriots. That's also good news today. FourPatriots.com/martini is where you want to go. Fantastic deals on so many things. You can get your last chance at deals on the Patriot Pure line of items, including the UV phone sanitizer, the UV wand, the sanitation solution machine, and the disinfecting power bank. But right now, their deluxe 3-month survival food kits are back in stock after being sold out for more than a year. These 3-month kits have 688 total servings per kit, which is about 8 per day, also about 1,500 calories per day. And better recipes than ever. Pancakes, mac and cheese, chili, potato soup, spaghetti, lasagna, and more. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You can stash food away and be confident that whenever a disaster strikes, you and your family will be ready. Go to fourpatriots.com/martini to get the deluxe 3-month survival food kit and the peace of mind you deserve. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $97. That's the number 4patriots.com/martini. That's 4patriots.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to our second martini. I think this is mostly good. Anytime a person on the left gets mildly red-pilled, I think it's a good day. And so this is from Axios of the growing rift between the Biden administration and New York City Mayor Eric Adams. And the tipping point, I think, has been his ability to see the illegal immigration crisis up close and personal, thanks to Greg Abbott and others sending some of those migrants to New York City since they are a sanctuary city. But here's what Axios said. Adams, the highest profile black mayor in the country, has gotten so crossways with the White House that he was dropped from Biden's 2024 campaign advisory board before it was announced last week. The rebuke reflects a new low in relations between Biden and the mayor, who was set to be a key surrogate for the campaign. They're fighting over immigration and crime and Adams' willingness to publicly criticize the administration. This isn't merely personal. It's part of a potential crisis for the campaign. Many Democratic state and city officials quietly agree with Adams and are happy he is taking flack on their behalf. They're running out of patience with the administration, especially for what they see as a lack of financial support or imminent solutions for dealing with the massive migration across the southwest border. One official in a Democratic-led state said that the White House has been too defensive towards Adams' critiques. Quote, Adams is right to be upset, and I think it's a massive mistake to be dismissive of him, the Democrat said. One person familiar with the relationship equated it to a fighting couple who don't want to hold hands in public. So, Jim, who knows exactly how public this will stay and how ugly it will get. But you know what they said a long time ago? A conservative is someone who's been mugged by reality. Eric Adams is not a conservative, and I don't think he will be anytime soon. We've got plenty of criticisms of him, but it's a lot easier to see the flaws and the massive intentional flaws in this administration's policy when it lands in your city as opposed to watching it on TV at the border.
Yeah, three observations here. The first is, when I was putting together the morning jolt about Kamala Harris earlier this week, I did notice that Adams had said something along the lines of, there's too much in the immigration portfolio for one person to handle this. And he basically said, if the vice president just doesn't have the time for this, or it looks like the vice president. So it was not full-throated denunciation of Kamala Harris, but there was a little jab in there. There was a acknowledgement that she wasn't getting the job done. It was on his radio show. It's not like he gave a full-throated roaring speech, but I think it's an interesting acknowledgement that Democrats are no longer going to pretend that Kamala Harris or anybody else in the administration has this well under control. Two, I think I've seen other people making, you know, the cautionary note that when Eric Adams is complaining about the White House and immigration policy, he's really complaining about, as that article says, a lack of financial support. He wants more money. He wants the federal government to say, hey, New York, you've got a lot of migrants on your hands. Here's a big check for you to help take care of them so you can buy more hotel rooms or more tents or fee that all the different expenses that come with having a huge amount of migrants come on your city. It's not really that Eric Adams is there saying, hey, you got to build border fencing or you got to have, you know, beef up border enforcement or something like that. It really is the standard issue Democratic give me more money argument. And the third thing is, I understand why there are folks on the right who believe that the incompetence of the Biden administration is deliberate, that basically they know that this is not effective border enforcement. They can see the numbers. They know that there are a lot of people who get past the Border Patrol. They know there are a lot of people who are detained by the Border Patrol and then released and told to come back for a court date that they're never going to show up for. And that this ends up with a system in which you're simply facilitating, you're delaying illegal immigration is what your policy amounts to. It doesn't actually, you know, it's not actually deporting them. And the fact that when you do deport them, a lot of people just turn around and start the journey all over again. The problem with the idea is that this is all some sort of Biden plan or Democrats' effort and that they really want to do this. First of all, this assumes that someday they'll be able to enact a amnesty and get all of these people as voters. Now, I know they beat the drum relentlessly for a path to citizenship. Didn't do it in the first 2 years when they had control of the House and Senate. Not looking all that likely in the next 2 years. So I don't know when that part of the plan would kick in. And the problem is that in the meantime, you overwhelm the border communities. Maybe the plan for Democrats was, well, a whole bunch of border communities in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, they're going to suffer. They're going to be finding dead bodies in the middle of the desert. They're going to have strange social services. They're going to have all the consequences of this. But we can live comfortably in more northern states and we won't really have to deal with the problem. Well, when you get migrants flown to Martha's Vineyard, when you get migrants dropped off in front of the vice president's house at the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., when you get them shipped to New York, when you get them shipped to Chicago, everybody sees it. And as Muriel Bowser said, well, we're not a border state. We don't have these resources. Like El Paso is just rolling in the dough and has plenty of resources and space to deal with all this. It's almost like I can't believe that, maybe they are that incompetent. It's very hard to believe that Democrats would not foresee that at some point you just run out of capacity to process these migrants. You run out of the capacity to hold them, feed them, take care of them. And obviously, we're just, you know, we can't roll out the welcome mat. There's a reason we have border enforcement. If you have an effectively open border, sooner or later, bad people are going to come in, whether it's terrorists, drug runners, Cuban traffickers, gang members, murderers, rapists. We know they're in there. We know, you know. So it's one of those things where it's hard to believe this is all part of some fine-tuned Biden plan all coming to fruition or something like that. I think it's a bunch of almost anti-nativist, almost, you know, excessively pro-immigration, kumbaya, all immigration policy stems from the inscription of the Statue of Liberty philosophy that now the Biden administration is running smack into the, you know, ironically, a wall, metaphorically. It's running into its own consequences of its actions, and it's becoming a problem that it really can't even get its arms around.
To watch this play out publicly when the Democrats are usually pretty good about message discipline and solving these things behind closed doors, for Adams to get this frustrated is not only illustrative of just how serious this problem is, but the fact that there are a lot of other Democrats who share his frustration and are getting basically the same cold shoulder from this administration, especially at this time in a political cycle, is very, very interesting. Mm. I assume most of them are going to line up publicly behind Biden, you know, when the time comes. But you need enthusiasm to win, too. And right now, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of it in some of these places.
If someone told you the recession started today, would you change anything about your daily life? Has the big recession monster already arrived? Don't be fooled by what you read. Stocks tend to outperform during a recession anyways. Make sure you're getting the most trustful information. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, on to our final martini now, Jim. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately about tough times at the Fox News channel ever since Fox News and Tucker Carlson split up. But if you look at the ratings, yeah, he's that time slot's way down for Fox. But overall, Fox is still dominating primetime. Everything from 5 p.m. Eastern time to midnight, they are winning. And in many cases, they are dominating, especially with the 5 and Gutfeld and so forth. MSNBC clearly in second at most places. Jim, CNN, with the exception of the Trump town hall, is pathetic. They're just really, really down. Their highest rated show from this was last Friday's ratings was Jake Tapper at 4 p.m. with 636,000. But in primetime, Jim, not only did they get crushed by Fox and MSNBC, but in the 8 o'clock hour, 9 o'clock hour, and 10 o'clock hour, CNN lost every one of those hours to Newsmax. Now, Newsmax is probably enjoying a little bit of a bump right now because of the people that are mad at Fox for splitting up with Tucker Carlson. But at 8 o'clock, Anderson Cooper lost to Eric Bolling, who is a former Fox guy. Then Chris Plant, local radio host here in Washington, brand new show, easily beating Anderson Cooper again. And then at 10 p.m., Greg Kelly, also a former Fox guy, beating out Chris Wallace, whose shift to CNN could not be more of a debacle. So, Jim, I don't know how long this will last, but looks like, you know, you could talk about how it's a little bit of a bump for Newsmax, but CNN is just floundering.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the things that jumps out at me is that, you know, this is the time slot for folks like Anderson Cooper, who are considered in both the news business and I think just kind of the general broader media environment. Anderson Cooper is a big star, right? He's an instantly recognizable face. This is entirely separate of what you think of him in his reporting. He's like, people know who he is. He's had his biography. He gets interviewed and does late night shows and all that kind of stuff. He's a celebrity, right? Name one host on Newsmax.
I should name a couple, but now most people can't.
There's one guy, Steve Spindler, whatever. He used to be on with Cam on NRA News way back when. But by and large, you know, Newsmax personalities, I guess there's Greg Price, right?
There are
a handful of them, but they're not terribly well known. They're not Anderson Cooper. So the interesting thing is that Newsmax, at least in this, you know, very brief time period, has more viewers than CNN, which is a, you know, celebrity network. Like if you're hosting primetime in CNN, you're considered to be a very big deal, even if it isn't necessarily the case. I think this shows that Chris Licht has some work cut out for them. I think it's very interesting that it demonstrates that really this is 2 days after the town hall. And, you know, I think it was like 3 million viewers for the town hall. That was, you know, very down from Trump TV appearances in 2015, 2016. But for CNN on a weeknight, that's super duper huge. That's, you know, that still would have been a good night for Tucker Carlson back in his, you know, glory days. I think you're absolutely right. I think that there is the Newsmax audience is a demonstration that a chunk of the Tucker Carlson audience is shopping around. And they're giving Newsmax a try. Now, maybe they'll stay there. Maybe they won't stay there. If Tucker Carlson comes out and does a Twitter show at 8 o'clock or something like that, then people might turn off their televisions and turn on their phones and tablets and watch it there. Or I guess theoretically, the stream it through their televisions. So that would be what they would be more interested in than this. I think if you're CNN, like, you know, this is depressing. You can most point out it's a Friday night without casting any aspersions at any of the cable news networks. I hope on your Friday nights you have something else to do besides watch cable news. In fact, I hope most weeknights you have something else to do. The only times I'm watching it is when there's a debate or live results of an election or some event happening. And CNN, for decades now, has struggled with this problem of this. I sense that they are fire alarm television. If you hear that something blew up somewhere around the world, a bunch of people will turn the channel to CNN. Wanting to watch breathless Wolf Blitzer saying, stand by the situation room, you know. But by and large, for the, you know, seeing people arguing about politics, they've settled into their habits. For a long time, it was Fox News and liberals, you know, set into MSNBC. I don't know if there's, you know, a great appetite for some third debate show. And they've had all kinds of, you know, efforts they've had. Don Lemon was in primetime for a while. That's before he became Greg. No longer in his prime time. think back to, you know, the brilliant experiment of, let's put Elliot Spitzer, the guy who left office for banging prostitutes with Kathleen Parker, poor Kathleen Parker, and to say, oh, the people will love, women viewers will love that. Go figure. It turned out Elliot Spitzer and Kathleen Parker did not get along, and she ended up departing. They've had like a whole, Chris Cuomo for all that time, right? The idea, they've had all kinds of combative, you know, a lot during the Trump years, very resistancy figures anchoring news show and argument and debate shows in there. And it was either a watered down version of MSNBC, or it just wasn't what people associate CNN for. You know, people associate CNN with, you know, something blew up overseas, something's at war, war correspondence, coverage of Afghanistan, coverage of Ukraine. So yeah, that's what CNN is really good at. The other stuff, night to night, debating, not nearly as well. Of course, this will probably prevent me from showing up on CNN anytime soon.
Yes. We're in more polarized camps now. And CNN, for a long time, staked itself out as trying to be in the middle, even though they clearly drifted left. But then once Trump came along, they went hard left, and people still preferred MSNBC, although everybody's ratings on the left went up. But now that they're trying to go back a little bit more towards the middle, maybe that's part of the issue. I don't know. But Jim, in terms of the numbers here, they didn't even have any host in primetime that night with 500,000 people. The closest was 447,000 with the second hour of Anderson Cooper under 300,000 and Chris Wallace at 263. We're a country of 330 million people. So that's a lot of money being poured into something that virtually no one is watching.
You know, Greg, this podcast began with criticism of the FBI and Department of Justice. If they're looking for new spots for the Federal Witness Protection Program, maybe you put them at a CNN host in prime time, and nobody, the mob and everybody else will never be able to figure out where they are.
Oh, man. What a day. Boy, this is going to be a long week. Jim, see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Please subscribe to our podcast. If you don't already, tell some friends to do that as well. We'd love to have them too. Thank you for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at @Dateline_DC. Have a great Tuesday and join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
Hey, this is Todd Herman, host of The Todd Herman Show. You might have heard me on Rush Limbaugh's show as a regular fill-in for about 8 years. I now do a show out of the high mountains of free America because, you know, I got exiled from Seattle. Why the need to remake country music and into what? From there, I looked at art. Art under the guise of totalitarian regimes is so interesting because it seems that Beyonce is doing exactly what totalitarian regimes want done with art. Check out The Todd Herman Show every day on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
In an attempt to divide America and Israel, leftists have spread hateful falsehoods about Israel and its right to self-defense. You deserve the truth. Hey, y'all, it's Sarah from The Sarah Carter Show. Israel has missiles flying over its head, yet the radical left is calling them racist, evil, and every other smear imaginable. It's disgusting. And on this week's Sarah Carter Show, we expose them for what they are, anti-Semitic lies about our Jewish brothers and sisters. Subscribe to The Sarah Carter Show on your favorite podcast app.